Welcome to Pop Culture on the Apricot Tree, where we talk about gospel insights through great stories and help you find entertainment that is both true and beautiful. Pop Culture on the Apricot Tree is part of the Public Square Media network of podcasts that seek to bring an LDS perspective into the public square. I'm your host, Liz Busby. I'm a writer of science fiction and fantasy, a reviewer of books, and a Latter-day Saint. And with me today is my co-host, Carl.
My name is Carl Cranny. I have a PhD in religion, and I have written on the intersection of religious themes in pop culture.
And we have two guests with us today. Carol, will you introduce yourself?
I'd be happy to. I'm Carol Rice. I'm communications director for Public Square Magazine, and I'm a solar-powered mom of five. I'm a nine-eye of six, and really excited to talk about the topic we've got going on today.
Okay, and our other guest is Tiffany.
Yes, my name is Tiffany Hales. I am an attorney. I'm also a mom, but most importantly, I am a full-time fashionista.
I love it. I love it. And today we are going to be talking about motherhood in the media. We're going to discuss some of the best and worst portrayals of mothers in movies, TV, the things we wish we saw more often in media, and just in general, our feelings about how motherhood is portrayed. But first, we're going to do our best book segment, where we each recommend one thing we're watching, reading, or listening to. Since we were doing an episode on motherhood, I thought I'd recommend one of my favorite parenting books. So I went through my Goodreads and found this in my parenting category. It's a really funny book. It's called Because I Said So, The Truth Behind the Myths, Tales, and Warnings Every Generation Passes Down to Its Kids by Ken Jennings. Yes, that Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy Ken Jennings. And basically, he takes all of the things you tell your kids, like don't sit too close to the TV or you'll ruin your eyes, or don't swallow your gum, it stays in your stomach for 7 years, all these things. And he investigates how true they are. So it's like a little parental Mythbusters thing, and you find out all sorts of fun facts. And Ken Jennings is just such a charming writer and really fun to listen to. So I highly recommend Because I Said So by Ken Jennings.
So I have a question. Does it not ruin my kids' eyes if they're too close to the TV?
You must read and find out.
Okay.
What have you got for us today, Carl?
So I have an oldie but a goodie, because when I was doing my master's program, I had a gentleman who lived up the street who was in my branch who owned the first 7 or 8 seasons of The Simpsons. And I would just borrow them one at a time and just watch them straight through. And I finished my program and moved away and didn't keep up with The Simpsons. But because we were doing this episode, I wanted to revisit Marge a little bit. Spoiler alert, that she's going to be one of the ones that I bring up. And I watched some of the episodes that I picked up where I left off. And oh my gosh, like something you're watching, reading, or listening to. I have forgotten how good The Simpsons is. And I'm going to keep watching The Simpsons now. Like I'm in season 9 now. It's a great show. There's a reason this show has been on the air since the Reagan administration. And these voice actors are among the most highly paid people in the entire voice acting industry, because the show is fantastic. And so I am watching The Simpsons right now.
I think that is fascinating. I grew up in a household where we were not allowed to watch The Simpsons. So maybe I need to revisit this.
There's a reason that I started watching it when I was in my master's program, finally. Like, I was one of those families, too, but I don't know that I'd recommend it for kids, but it is for adults who can get the humor and some of the things. It's not quite adult animated show, but it is more along those lines. I think in the 80s, people were like, oh, animation, it must be for kids. No, I think we're wiser than that now, and so that should inform our sensibilities.
I should hope we are. Carol, what have you got for us today?
I'm finding myself very fascinated about the conversation going on around AI, specifically ChatGPT. Barry Weiss, I like Barry Weiss anyway. Her last episode of her Honestly podcast was an interview with Sam Altman, I want to say the CEO of ChatGPT. It was a really fascinating episode where I felt like they were very, both of them, just pretty unapologetic about talking about both the things that they were afraid of and the things that they felt that would be very beneficial as a result. And it didn't feel hyperbolic on one side or the other. It just was a really great conversation. And I I learned a lot. I'm more fascinated than ever. I'm very undecided about what I think about all of this and what's coming our way. But yeah, highly recommend it because I think there's implications for just how we're going to handle this with our families and ethics involved. And there's just a lot to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a ton to talk about there. I actually had an interview for teaching writing at BYU today, and we spent a good deal talking about ChatGPT and the implications for teaching writing in college. So it's going to be an interesting world out there, but the worst thing we could do is put our heads in the sand and just pretend right. like it's going to go away, because it's not. Tiffany, what have you got for us?
I am currently obsessed with the Lori Vallow Daybell trial, which is happening here in Boise, where I live. I followed this story from the beginning, and the news organization that broke this story is called East Idaho News, and they had a particular reporter. His name is Nate Eaton, and if you've seen the footage of the reporter tracking Lori and Chad in Hawaii saying, "Lori, where's the kids?" That's Nate Eaton. And so he is camped out in Boise currently for the duration of the trial. And every night he does a YouTube video, which he also simultaneously broadcasts on Facebook as well. It's called Courtroom Insider. And he starts it at 7:30 every night, and it goes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, depending on how much he has to say. And he gives the rundown of what happened in the trial that day. He also honors the victims every night. He tries to have some little story about the victims in this case. And then he takes viewers' questions about the trial. And so I have been religiously listening to him every night. I tell the dog, it's 7:30. It's time for a walk. We're going to go listen to Nate Eaton. And we walk around the neighborhood and listen to Courtroom Insider. I highly recommend Nate's, I call it a podcast for lack of a better term, although it's not on a podcast format. He does a really good job with trial analysis. And the other thing he does a really good job with is there is a lot of crazy stuff coming out that if you were not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you would think this is really very cultish. And he is an active member of the church, and he does a very good job of separating out the crazy, saying this is not mainstream LDS church beliefs. They have taken this to an extreme. This is how the mainstream LDS church is. And so I've really appreciated him doing that as well, in bringing that analysis so that people who aren't members of the church that are following him can hopefully not walk away from following this trial thinking very negative things about members of the church.
Yeah, that's so nice to know that we have a reporter who knows what he's talking about in yes. this case. It's very important. There's often a lack of religious literacy in the media, so it's yes. very nice to have that.
So true.
I wanted to jump in really quick and just say, on the subject of ChatGPT, something that I really hope someday that I will watch is, we can link this in the show notes. Someone asked ChatGPT to write a spec script for a movie about a Latter-day Saint missionary who becomes a superhero. And then they asked them to write a sequel to it. I'm telling you, I would watch the dickens out of that movie, because ChatGPT created something that was so interesting. And the sequel got into some really interesting Latter-day Saint theology. And I was like, oh man, if anybody ever makes that movie, I am here for it. That would be fantastic.
That's pretty cool. I'd love to see that.
Yes, definitely hand me those links. And we will have links to all these recommendations on our website, popcultureapricottree.com. And if you buy anything through these links, it helps support the podcast so we can keep bringing you conversations about the true and the beautiful in pop culture. We also wanted to do a shout out to an episode, not a recent episode in this case, from one of our fellow Public Square Media podcasts. And we're actually spotlighting Carol's podcast, the Raising Family podcast. Last March, right when the whole mess with Disney and the state of Florida was taking off, the Raising Family podcast put out an interview with a former DreamWorks animator, Andrew Young. And the insights that he offered into just how intentional children's media producers are in trying to shape the future of families is frankly just incredible. It's really a must listen for all parents of young children. So it can help you think about the media that you're choosing for your kids. And it goes right along with the message of this podcast that we want to think about what media we're consuming and what kind of messages it's sending us, and talk about those. Even if you choose to watch something that sends a message you don't agree with, like making that conscious choice to talk about it and talk about why you disagree with it. I think the Disney Florida thing is blown way out of proportion and is getting frankly ridiculous. There's a large grain of truth to the fact that the entertainment industry has a lot of influence on future generations. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. That was last March on the Raising Family podcast, Andrew Young, Social Engineering in Media. And now we'll get on to our main discussion of motherhood in media. Speaking of how the media influences how we think about things, kind of my inspiration for this is just noticing that a lot of movies that I watch with my kids, the parents are the bad guys, right? They're the ones restricting the teenager's freedom or whatever, or they're just left out if it's just about the kids. The parents basically aren't there or aren't part of it, or they're the comic relief. There's not a ton of really functional families in the media that I've been watching recently. And I just wanted to talk about what we've noticed in the past and in recent media, good portrayals of motherhood, not so great ones, complex ones, and what things we wish there was more of that we could share. And maybe you guys will have seen things I didn't see and we'll all get good recommendations today. Does anyone have any particular thoughts that they want to start with on the topic of mothers in the media?
I asked quite a few friends, my daughters, daughter-in-laws, just I even put it out on Instagram. And I was surprised how consistently people came back with one thing in particular. They said it lots of different ways, but if I had to really boil it down to one thing that I heard over and over again was just that mothers are portrayed either as almost perfect. So somebody that you don't feel like you could emulate because they're just so perfect, or they're awful and absent. That it was really hard to find somebody to model that wasn't one of the extremes. She's either superwoman or she's the reason for all of the subjects'
traumas.
Yeah, the trauma. Exactly. Yeah, that she's just hard to get her hands around a good model.
And I think I feel that as a mother, like it's hard to find a mother as a person in media, right? Instead of as a role to someone else, which, yeah, motherhood is being a big part of someone else's life. Like your mom and your dad, but in this case, your mom we're talking about, is the biggest influence on you growing up. And it makes a huge difference to you. But you're also a person as a mother. And so you want to see some of that humanity as well.
Agreed. One of the shows that I put down or that I thought about, because I really like how this individual is portrayed, is if you've ever watched Friday Night Lights. I love Friday Night Lights. And Tammy Taylor is the mom on Friday Night Lights. And she is married to the football coach. And at the beginning of the show, they have a teenage daughter and she's going through all sorts of angst with her teenage daughter. And then she ends up pregnant. And so a big span of time between the teenage daughter and the new baby. Plus, she's also a principal. She has a job. She started off as a counselor and then she became a principal. To watch her kind of struggle with the angst that her teenage daughter is putting her through, plus managing what it's like to have a much younger child and juggling your work schedule and your home commitments, and then juggling her commitments that are required for being the football coach's wife. And there's a lot of times on that show where she humanizes it. She's not perfect and she doesn't pretend to be perfect and she owns her mistakes and admits her mistakes, but she tries.
You know, you and I have the exact same amount of experience being parents. And the truth of it is that we just don't have any control. You know, for the most part, we're just winging it. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do in this situation. But I'll tell you what, the most important thing to me is that my daughter be able to talk to me. A girl is entitled to that with her mother.
And I think that makes her so human, because I think us as mothers, at least most women as mothers, I'm never intending to do anything that's going to be hurtful or harmful to my children. But I'm not perfect, and I could go through and list a litany of mistakes, of parenting mistakes that I made. But I hope in the end my kids will say, we know that you tried. We know that you were trying to do your best with what you had, that they will have grace with me with those parenting imperfections. And I suspect that as they begin to have children and have their own parenting imperfections, that maybe that grace for me will happen. But I really like how she's portrayed, because I think she's a very real, relatable mom that we can see in the media.
There's something to be said for the family sitcom, which has gone out of style, I feel. There's not a ton of them, and at least I don't watch them with the downfall of network television to the streaming age. It's all superheroes and sci-fi fantasy, especially in my house, with the exception of Ted Lasso. But there's not a lot of family interactions day-to-day kind of things that I watch. Carl, you got any thoughts?
So it's interesting that you bring this up, the idea that the family sitcom has completely died, which is why, as I mentioned earlier, the one that I wanted to revisit was The Simpsons, because I think overall, this TV show aimed at 13-year-olds and older to understand the jokes, whatever, and some of the references I think would go way over the kids' head. It's definitely for adults on occasion, or at least they slip things that are in that are just for the adult crowd watching. But I think The Simpsons is actually a relatively positive portrayal of family life. It's true that Homer is a dunce, but if you watch enough of the show, it's because he's got a crayon shoved up his nose that makes him an idiot, and he pulls it out, he becomes a genius for an episode, and then at Lisa's behest, he has to push it back in so that it becomes his normal self again. But Marge is the stay-at-home parent, and no matter what happens, they are both faithful to each other, and there's never any hint of any sort of impropriety or anything like that. And so to see Marge go through the various things that she does as the stay-at-home mom, trying to wrangle Bart, who's just a nightmare, and Lisa, who's very smart, and Maggie is still just a baby and has been since, again, the Reagan administration. But one of the episodes that I watched for this is the one where Lisa wants to go help clean the oil spill. A tanker has crashed aground and oil is everywhere.
We'd be doing our part for the environment. Plus, we get to clean up all those cute animals.
Honey, we don't need to drive 400 miles to clean animals. You can stay right here and give the dog a bath.
What? Oh, Mom, please. You can make this my birthday and Christmas presents.
Oh, all right. We'll go.
But she takes Maggie and Lisa, and they go. And of course, they show up and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. All the baby seals have been reserved by Hollywood celebrities, but you can scrub these rocks. But she scrubs rocks with Lisa for a couple of days until they realize this isn't actually really helping. And they head home to the disaster that is Bart and Homer being left alone. But I just appreciated that moment where Marge is like, no, we're not going to drive 500 miles to do this thing. That's crazy. But Lisa asks her to and makes her case. And Marge is like, all right, you've made your case. Let's do that. And they do it until it becomes obvious that it's not helping anymore. And I appreciated that. And I think Marge and Homer and The Simpsons as a whole are a very... it's a cartoon family and hilarious and dumb things happen. You don't shove a crane up your nose. That's not actually going to help anything. But there are long-term nuances to this show, and I appreciate all of them, to show a family that is dysfunctional and yet functional through all of it is, I think, something great. And since it's been going for so long, this is the kind of thing that can be like a multi-generational TV show to watch at this point, something you could have watched in the 80s or the 90s or the aughts or the teens, and now the 20s, it's been going on for a while. And I think one of the enduring reasons for that is because they're just a normal family. And Marge is part of that. And so that's why I wanted to bring her up as an example of a more complicated animated TV show that has some nuance and some heart to it. And despite all the shenanigans and the social commentary, The Simpsons has that.
I agree. One of my favorite parts about Marge is when somebody does something she disagrees with and she doesn't want to come out flat and say, I'm not happy with that. And she just goes, and you can tell she's not happy with it. And she's trying to process and decide how she wants to react.
Absolutely. There's a couple of classic things that each character does. And Marge's little grunt of disapproval is definitely one of those.
Doesn't that make you wonder what all of your kids would say about what your little message of disapproval, your little micro expression of disapproval is? We all have one. Makes me wonder what mine is.
Well, I know what mine is, and it's awful, and I should fix it, because we've come to the point where, like, when I'm really frustrated with my kids and I, like, there's nothing more to say and we just have to move on, I go, I love you. And we just move on. And yeah, when mom says, I love you, that means we need to stop talking about this. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't make that my phrase of let's be done.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to ask my kids mine.
I worry that mine is just going from 0 to 60 and be like, all right, we're done. Time for bed. Anyway.
I think mine is the stink eye, the eye of death. Like, I am not happy. And I give them the look and they're like, ooh, this might not end well for me.
Another interesting thing I was thinking about is movies about moms parenting, like the actual teaching of kids to do the right thing. One counterexample I had was the Netflix movie Yes Day. Did you guys watch this?
I heard about it, but didn't watch it.
So the concept is fun that, like, it was based on a book that came out about giving your children a day when you say yes to everything.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
For those of you on YouTube, you should see the look on Tiffany's face.
And yes, shenanigans ensue. They go through the car wash with the windows down and they play paintball with their parents and the kids do the mom's makeup and just all this stuff. But the part that bothered me was it's framed as our parents are no fun. They say no to everything. And what are the parents saying no to? They're saying no to building, like, baking soda volcanoes out of your waffles at breakfast. And, like, all these crazy things that, yeah, actually parents should say no to in order to, like, make the family function on a regular basis. They're not super controlling parents who won't let their kids do reasonable things. They're parenting in a normal way, like, to teach kids how to be functioning adults. And this is a bad thing because the parents are not fun. Sometimes I get really annoyed about the idea that parents have to be fun all the time. And the best friend mom is definitely one you see a lot in the media.
The cool mom. She's the cool mom.
That's a good example. Regina's mom from Mean Girls. I'm not one of those moms. I'm one of the cool moms. Don't be like her.
Or Donna from Mamma Mia.
And I don't think very many moms really are that bad. Of course, it's comedic effect. It's media, but it hurts to see that, to see this vilifying of teaching kids to be functioning adults. And then we wonder why they're not functioning adults. Yeah.
Or to have your teenager say, why can't you be the cool mom? Why can't you do this? Why can't you let me do that and be a cool mom? As a parent of teenagers, you want to have that good open dialogue and relationship with your kids. And it just feels like it stabs at you when you say that, because you're like, just like what you said, I'm trying to teach you. I want you to successfully adult. That is why I am not the cool mom, because you need to have boundaries and discipline and responsibility.
Every time my kids complain about their chores, I'm like, you will be the one whose college apartment actually gets cleaned and your roommates are going to love you. I am not sending you to college not knowing how to do dishes and being a drag on your roommates like I was, because I was not taught to do dishes. I just ignored them and let my roommates do them. And I feel horrible about it now.
I remember a time when my kids were little and they would learn my first name. And I remember each one of my kids went through a little stage like this where they wanted to call me Carol instead of mom. And it, along those lines where I would have to teach them, hey, there's only one person you get to call mom in the whole world. And there's only 5 little humans who will call me mom, and lots of people call me Carol, and you have lots of friends who are going to be your friends, but you only have one mom. And just, I think that applies a little bit to this idea of being their best friend. I feel like my kids had lots of friends. There was only one person in the whole world who was really designed to mother them. Lots of people will be mothering to them, but I'm their mom. And that was a role that I took really seriously and loved and still do.
Maybe we should move on to some really bad examples in the media of mothers.
Or can I, there was one thing I wanted to say about good examples. I found it interesting that in looking at examples of good moms, how many of them that had that really good mom energy weren't actual mothers, like Aunt May in Spider-Man. And there's, oh, from Blindside. Do you know that story, Leanne Tui? Blindside is the story about the young man who's the football player, and she
adopts him, basically. Yeah.
Adopts him, and just such a powerhouse mom. Again, lending that energy to somebody who wasn't her own child, but changed the trajectory of his life in really dramatic, significant ways. And in terms of like cartoons, I thought about Kala in Tarzan and how protective. And the one of the sweetest mom songs that we all know.
Cry every time.
Cry. It came from a moment of her loving somebody that wasn't her own, obviously. Tarzan was not her biological child. But I was just surprised how really good examples that I thought of, I realized, wait a second, in those situations, they weren't their actual moms, but they used that maternal strength that they had as a woman to completely change somebody else's life. I thought those were really beautiful examples for us to consider. A lot of women may never, for lots of different reasons, have their own biological children, but it just really speaks to that maternal power that we have. I thought those were really beautiful examples.
You're making me think also of Molly Weasley in Harry Potter, right? Everybody loves the scene at the end at the Battle of Hogwarts where she's defending her daughter against Bellatrix. But what is her real power in the series? It's the fact that she takes Harry into her house and gives him some food and knits him sweaters and does all these maternal things that make such a difference in the life of this child who doesn't have a mother figure.
I thought that the examples of Mrs. Incredible was a good one too, because there's an interesting dynamic in that family where they have to protect their kids from revealing that they're superheroes to the world. And so it's just they're all playing Clark Kent, right? Like they're these really superpowered people, but they have to be these mild-mannered suburbanites. But Mrs. Incredible is very capable. Like the whole scene where in the first movie where they are on the jet and she doesn't know the kids have stowed away, and then the missiles are coming at them. And so she's doing the plane thing while giving her kids orders and everything. And they're, for the first time, really understanding like what their mom is and how she's trying to both help them come into their own while trying to not be overbearing and protecting at the same time. And there's just, obviously, it's a fantastic situation because they're all superheroes with superpowers. But there are a lot of really good things in that movie about the family dynamics of the Incredible family. And I thought she was a good example as well. Also, we had to put this in the show notes. There is a great alternate opening scene where they're at a barbecue and she's like, oh, I'm a stay-at-home mom now. And everybody's like, oh, you're a stay-at-home mom. And she like has to totally go at and defend being the stay-at-home mom.
Wait a minute.
You consider raising a family nothing?
Well, it's fine if you're not suited for more substantial things.
Do you have any idea how much suffering would fail to take root if more people were just good parents?
Well,
what's more important than that? What kind of job? A job saving lives? What about confronting evil on a daily basis for years so that people like you can sleep in safety and security? Would you consider that kind of job substantial?
I would. Yes, I would.
Well, that's the job I gave up for my new job, raising a family. And nobody's going to tell me it's any less important.
And she gets a little angry at them. So they're like, wait, what was your job before? So then she has to...
We have to go.
We have to go.
Yeah.
But it's a great little scene. And I kind of wish they put that in the movie because we need more people just given what for our stay-at-home parents. Stay-at-home moms in this case, but I'm a stay-at-home dad. I got to throw that bone in there as well.
Yeah. It's definitely a thing that is underappreciated. And I think it's important that we have portrayals of both, right? Parents, moms who work and moms who don't. But... yeah, like showing that is something that is valid and helpful. Like you were talking about, Carol, with that maternal energy to nurture people to become their best. And that's definitely something Helen in The Incredibles does really well. She helps those children find who they are by nurturing their talent and treating them differently based on who they are, right? She knows that Violet is shy, needs to be coaxed out, and that Jack needs a little bit more limits and some consequences when he's not behaving well. And she does some real parenting in that.
Yeah. I asked ChatGPT for contemporary examples. Is there a contemporary example of a healthy mother who is not juggling a career, but has prioritized motherhood as her career? And it gave me a list of five people who the very first thing in their description was their career. I said, no, not a career other than motherhood. And it listed five more people and listed their career. So take what we will from that.
There's something to be said for we need some balance in the media, right? Representation matters. And so representation of all different kinds of mothers matter. Whether they're people who are mothering who are not actually mothers, or people who have a career, or people who stay at home, grandmothers, all of these are important in the media, and we don't see enough of them. I feel like there are a lot of examples in older media, too. When we were brainstorming some positive examples, the one that, like, my mother idol is Marmee in Little Women, because she's amazing and always knows what to say and do and raises those girls to be great people. And also, this is not the movie version, but A Wrinkle in Time, Mrs. Murray in that one is another one of my, like, she's a scientist and a stay-at-home mom, and she always knows what to say to these kids. And she has a very maternal energy while still being very smart and intellectual and talented, and I love her. So those are some of my favorites, but they're definitely older literature.
Anne of Green Gables, but again, that's another mom energy, not real mom. So
Marilla Cuthbert, she does not want to be a mother to this girl. They wanted a boy and they wanted someone quiet. And I actually really like that dynamic between them, because it's taboo to admit when you don't like or get along with your child. And this is a little different because she's adopted, but like having a personality conflict with your kids and then learning to like them is definitely something that mothers experience. My four kids are all different personalities, and some of them mesh more easily with me than others. And that's okay. It doesn't mean I like them any less. I still love all of them, but I have to learn to love each one differently and uniquely based on who they are. And Marilla definitely goes through that, figuring out how to love Anne, who is her polar opposite in temperament.
She does. She gets there.
All right, we got to get to some of these bad parenting examples because they're super fun. I think the most classic recent one is, of course, Mother Gothel from Tangled, who's not technically a mother, but is absolutely the worst.
It's like they took every trope of the narcissistic parent and decided to put it into a single character, and it was great.
Look in that mirror. You know what I see? I see a strong, confident, beautiful young lady. Oh, look, you're here too. I'm just teasing. Stop taking everything so seriously.
Everything is just so super passive aggressive. But I would hope that we could see it's all these sort of negative traits dialed up to 11. I would hope that we could look at that and be like, oh, maybe I should make that kind of joke toward my kid. Even if yours is only like a 3 on a scale of 1 to whatever she is, there are still some lessons to be learned there, and she's the worst.
And it's unfortunate because it has like the most catchy song about motherhood, which I totally sing to my kids. And they're like, wait a minute, mom. But I always am like, when they're arguing with me, I'm like, mother knows best. And they're like, mom, maybe not.
Of course, that's a play on Father Knows Best, which is like the TV show from the 50s where, and maybe someday, maybe next year we'll do a Father's Day one where we talk about how fathers have moved from Father Knows Best to Homer Simpson. And that itself is an interesting evolution of portrayals of fathers in media. But it's clearly a riff on the Father Knows Best thing, but just turned negatively. But you go ahead and use it positively in your life. I grant you permission.
It gets a laugh when we're having a little bit of a conflict over something.
Mother knows best, and I love you.
Exactly. Sometimes you need a little bit of humor to snap you out of a bad parenting cycle. I find laughing at myself as a parent can help.
Yes.
Any other examples we wanted to bring up?
You look at the mom on Titanic, and she is so obsessed with money and status. She's not concerned about her daughter's happiness. She is concerned with money and status and how that is going to impact her financially and her status. And so she's all about Rose. You have to marry the rich guy. Meanwhile, Rose is, but I love Jack and he has nothing. And just everything that Rose's mother was doing to keep Rose and Jack apart. So that I can't even remember the name of the character now. The rich guy.
He's such a non-entity, it doesn't even matter.
All I remember about that character is Picasso. Nobody's going to be buying his stuff in 100 years. Like, just throw that joke in there just so you know, like, all right, it's okay to hate this guy. He's a completely one-dimensional character.
Exactly. But just very interesting that I don't think Rose's mom, who is Ruth, sees herself as selfish. And that's what's really interesting in this movie. She sees herself as, I am providing, or there is a pathway for my daughter to have status and wealth. And that is a good thing for my daughter. And I want my daughter to have status and wealth because it opens up all of these other opportunities in life. So she does not realize in that movie how selfish she's actually being. And because she really thinks she's doing a good thing for her daughter. Meanwhile, as you can see from Rose's perspective, Rose is, I don't care about the status. I don't care about the wealth. That's not what is going to bring me happiness. True love and following what I want to do is going to bring me happiness. So it's a very interesting dynamic between the two of them in that movie.
I was just thinking how that compares with Disney's Brave, right? Because this is a very common trope, right?
Yes.
That like the parents want the daughter to marry someone and the daughter says no, whatever it is that the dad says.
I don't want to get married. I want to stay single and let my hair flow in the wind as I ride through the glen, firing arrows into the sunset.
I like the way Brave does it better than the example you just brought up from Titanic, because we do end up seeing from the mother's perspective that she's doing this for her daughter's benefit. And like they both come to the middle. Right. They both realize that the parental expectations on the daughter were maybe a bit much and steamrolling over her individuality and will. And the daughter realizes, hey, my parents don't actually want me to be miserable. They want to be responsible and to help me be an adult. And we have a responsibility for this kingdom. And there are things that need to happen. So they both come to the middle on that one. So I really like Brave as a mother-daughter movie. But there is that trope of particularly mother's expectations of their daughters and the conflict that ensues there. It's interesting to see what kind of message is sent by who wins that argument, which is usually the daughter.
But what's really interesting is I think that dynamic of mothers' expectations for their daughters transfers over very well into real life. I've got three daughters, and certainly I have had expectations for those three daughters. Some of my girls, I'm like, oh, okay, yes, I expected that. And then those same girls will do something that I'll go, no, that wasn't on my list. And then how I, as a mother, react when they are not fulfilling this expectation that I have of them, then I have to check myself and go, okay, is this a reasonable expectation? Should I even have this expectation? How do I then adjust when they are making a decision that's not in line with what I think my expectation is? Just how you navigate that, because they are very well aware, each one of my daughters, when they are doing something that is not in line with mom's expectations. I don't have to tell them, they know. And so I think that we see that dynamic not only in movies, but very much so in real life as well. And then how do we as parents deal with expectations we've put on our child, and should we have even put those expectations on to begin with?
I feel like there's a tension here that isn't just a mother-daughter, parent-child relationship with some of the stuff. Because I feel like when Ruth wants Rose to marry, that was a bigger deal in the early 1900s than it is today. Now you can go to college and get your own job and have your own credit card and your mortgage, whatever else. I'm reminded of a funny comment once that my girlfriend told me to treat her like a princess, so I married her off to a random stranger to strengthen my alliance with France. Like, that's what being a princess was to a large extent, but now we have this very Disneyfied version of that. And so it's interesting that some of these examples of bad parents are maybe, on some level, just the differences in cultural expectation. We just think the whole culture was messed up back then because you didn't marry for love. Well, that was most of human history. And so this is an interesting thing to bring into our media diet, to bring up examples like this, where Ruth comes across worse because of our cultural expectations, not just because she's a bad mother in other ways as well. So that is an added dynamic to that sort of example of bad mothering.
I think the part that bothers me about it is not that, like, some of these expectations are bad, because sometimes they are. Sometimes parents have inappropriate ideas of what they want their kids to do, or they want to micromanage their kids' life, and they've decided that they're going to be a doctor, even though they're suited to be a poet or whatever. The problem is when we get this media narrative of the protagonist is always the child, and throwing off the expectations of society and their parents is always the good choice. So I like it when we have shows that complicate this and say, just because someone has expectations of you doesn't mean they're wrong. We need to be a little more nuanced than that and consider, like you were saying, Tiffany, consider, is this a reasonable expectation? Is this a good thing for the child? Is there a way that we could have this in a different form? Like, it's a good thing to expect your kids to be responsible adults. How responsible adult looks is different for each person. Your child isn't irresponsible just because they decide they don't want to be a lawyer, they want to be a school teacher. That's not irresponsible. It's just a different life choice. And it comes with different associated things that you have to deal with. But throwing off all expectations is bad as a default, right? That's not a healthy way to do things either.
And if you'd like to know more about that, you can go listen to our episode on Turning Red.
Yes, Turning Red. Oh, Turning Red was fun.
Oh, I love how all three of you were like, oh, all at the same time.
I wanted to like that movie, and I was severely disappointed by it. But we already did a whole episode about that, so we won't go on too long about it.
5 minutes in, I knew I wasn't going to.
It was hard because Pixar has done pretty well at this before, it seems, but that one, not so much for us.
So I wanted to bring up a sort of it's complicated example. And it's interesting because this is a mother who has been portrayed in different ways over time. And part of what I did to prepare for this podcast was to go watch an episode of the original 1960s Addams Family, and then some of the 1991 movie, and then some of Wednesday, which I hadn't watched before, and I can already tell I don't like it, because part of what it's so fun of the 1960s Addams Family is that there's this bizarre macabre family trying to just get along with all their suburbanite friends, and the mismatch is the source of all the tension and the humor, and they don't understand why this guy does not want their kids to go to school after he meets Pugsley and Wednesday. And then by the time it evolves to the movie or the TV show that came out last year, they're like, no, we're going to send Wednesday off to her own boarding school with vampires and sirens and Medusas. And I'm just like, I think you've missed the point. But it's interesting to see Morticia in all of these variations is a pretty good mom to Wednesday, because they're so of like mind. And this is just part of the whole Addams Family themselves are just so macabre, and she's cutting the heads off of roses, and oh, look, the thorns are so nice this year. And while Wednesday's off, like, trying to light her brother on fire or something. It's just what the family does. But I thought the sort of scene that I saw between Morticia and Wednesday in the Tim Burton TV show from last year was interesting, because there was a, I've always wanted the best for you, but now it's time for you to spread your wings and leave the nest and become your own person. And so there's this interesting dynamic that seems to have always happened between Morticia and Wednesday, that they're so the same. But I think the healthiest of the ones that I reviewed for this podcast was actually the most recent one, even though there's a strong sense of expressive individualism, which is a philosophy I don't necessarily agree with. But the idea of your kids growing up and leaving the house and becoming their own person, that's the plan of salvation on one level, right? That's why we're here, to leave the presence of our heavenly parents and to become our own people. And so that was just a really interesting mother-daughter relationship to review as different people have portrayed it over time. I don't know. Morticia Adams and Wednesday Adams is, I'm going to put it not in a good category or a bad category. It's a complicated category and was really fun to watch.
Any other complicated mothers we should discuss?
Oh, I've got a lot to say on complicated mothers. A couple of thoughts came to my mind. Stepmoms and how stepmoms are portrayed in the media. And I think the two examples on extreme ends of stepmoms are obviously Cinderella and the evil stepmom who does not want Cinderella to marry the prince, wants one of her daughters to marry the prince. And then we have Carol Brady. And Carol Brady is like Superwoman stepmom. And it's so interesting because if you watch the Brady Bunch, I think maybe the first episode is the only episode where they deal with a step-parent situation. When Mike and Carol are getting married, Bobby is a little bit sad. He's looking at a picture of his mother and Carol says, oh, she'll always be your mom, etc. And then there is never a mention ever again of either one of the original spouses or parents to these kids. And it is like they are one nuclear family born under the same umbrella. And I have been a stepchild. I have also been a stepmom. And those family dynamics in the best of circumstances are complicated, let alone in the worst of circumstances for a whole variety of reasons. And I just think that sometimes the media doesn't do a really good job of portraying the challenges and the blessings of step-parenting, that it is either you are the evil stepmom or if you're not Carol Brady, then you're failing at step-parenting sort of a thing. There's not a lot of middle ground there. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think more often than not, step-parents get portrayed on the Cinderella end of the spectrum as the evil step-parent. And you're here to ruin my life. And your presence ruins my life. And so it just, that's why I put it in the category of this is complicated.
For sure. And like, even when it does turn out well in the end, it's like the last 10 minutes of the movie, they have a good relationship with their step parent, or they like have the inkling of the beginning of a good relationship. And that doesn't really balance out all the rest.
Exactly. And then I also had to put reality TV moms in there too. Under the it's complicated. Because again, I picked two reality TV moms that seemingly have very opposite agendas and very maybe somewhat opposite parenting styles. I picked Kris Jenner, also known as the Momager for the Kardashians, and then Michelle Duggar, who is the mother of 19 children and runs a very regimented household with her 19 children. And they each have very different kind of mothering styles and dynamics for how they are raising their kids. And it also makes me think, again, when we are consuming this media as consumers of media, how does seeing these examples in reality TV, because I think we know a lot of reality TV is very scripted, how do those portrayals of those moms, how do we internalize that? And how does that then subsequently come out in our parenting with our own children? Any thoughts on that now that I've thrown it down there?
I'm also thinking about all of the, there's a good segment of fixing parents type of shows like The Super Nanny or
their Mom Swap one.
Yeah, Mom Swap. Mom Swap.
One that I just watched it's starring the worst mom in America. Lenore Scazzi. I don't know if you heard of her. Back in the 90s.
Oh, Lenore Scazzi. Oh, yeah. I love her.
So back in the 90s, she became famous and went on the Today Show and all the talk show circuits because she let her 9-year-old try to ride the subway home. Like, she gave him directions and a map, and it was a controlled situation, but somebody found out, and all of a sudden, she was on the front page of all the newspapers as the worst mom in America. So now she has a show where she helps overprotective parents let their kids do stuff. I watched one today where there was a 10-year-old whose mom was still cutting his food and feeding it to him, and he wasn't allowed to ride a bike. But his stepsister, who was 6, could ride a bike because they were operating under 2 different rules for the 2 different kids. But the point being, parenting under a microscope kind of thing and seeing up close how someone is a parent, that's healthy for us. These reality TV parents, or even like the Instagram parents, of whom there are many members of our church who are momming on Instagram. I don't know if it's good for us as a people, because I know my parenting wouldn't hold up if somebody followed me around with a camera 24/7. Like, we're human beings.
So 2 points. One, the Instagram moms, they are not followed around 24/7. Right? This is part of what is so toxic about social media, is people will only post the good stuff. In that moment where I freak out, I'm like, all right, we're done, we're going to bed. Like, that doesn't end up on TikTok, right? That's not a moment that I put up on social media. And so, of course, that doesn't measure up. I got to go dig this article up and we can put it in the show notes. But there was a fascinating article a few years ago by an atheist, like, hardcore feminist woman. And she basically confessed, I think it was either in Slate or maybe it was in Jezebel. She's like, I can't stop reading Mormon mommy blogs because they're so amazing. And it was this real interesting testament to me, because she talked about in the article about how she confessed this to some of her, again, very liberal, mostly atheist friends who do not agree with a lot of the politics of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but all of them could not stop reading Mormon mommy blogs. It was like this window, not in an anthropological, like, oh, look at that monkey over there sort of way, but in a genuine, this is amazing because everybody here has to wrestle with, like, questions about religion and reality and life and meaning and parenting and how to do all the stuff. And all of these Mormon mommy bloggers, I'm sure they had problems and they talk about these problems. One of the things I like about the Mormon mommy blog genre, it doesn't seem generally to be a little more open than the sort of TikTok, Instagram version that it has evolved into today. But this article was probably, maybe a decade ago at this point, where a lot of these really deep questions are figured out. And so there's still drama. There's still things that happen. There's still imperfections and complications. But the baseline is there and it is beautiful. And it was just a really fascinating article to read. I don't know if that's an endorsement of Instagram, TikTok mommying. I'm a big fan of Lenore Skenazy. She also wrote the book Free Range Kids. And I got to say, just as the stay-at-home dad, I get away with stuff. This is a deeply unfair situation. I know that when I go to the store and I've got my 3 kids running around and they're causing trouble and just running up and down the aisles. And I'm like, whatever, kids, just don't knock stuff over. You're fine. I do not think moms can get away with that the way that I can, because they're like, oh, look, the dad's doing such a good job. The kids aren't dead. And it's a sexist thing that is advantageous to me. And yet I find deeply problematic in some other ways as well, even if I'm glad that I get to take advantage of some of that stuff. So that's a defense a little bit of Mormon mommy blogger stuff and a caution about Instagram. And a plug for free range parenting, which is legal in Utah for all of you who live there.
And I remember that article because I think we covered it on This Week in Mormons. And so I don't think it's as old as you think it is, because I'm pretty sure that my sister and I covered that article on our podcast. And I do remember her just being so fascinated with all the pretty pictures and the decorated houses and all of that stuff as kind of a kickback to a different generation. And so different from what her life experience was. But I do agree that things have evolved from the blogging situation. I think there was a lot more reality going on in the blogging, because you could have a blog that you pulled up and you could read words. And we've gone away from that blogging to Instagram and TikTok, which are based primarily on visual. And so you have all sorts of filters that are used on Instagram and TikTok. And it's more so about the quality and the content of the picture than really what reality is. The picture needs to look pretty. And I think it's one of the reasons that our church leaders really warn us about social media and how much time we're spending on social media and the things that we're looking at on social media. Because if I'm a young mom, and I'm scrolling through Instagram and TikTok, and I'm seeing these other young moms that have what appear on its face to be these perfect lives and pretty houses and my house looks like a mess, how then am I feeling about myself? And it has to have some sort of an impact. And I think we're fooling ourselves when we say, oh, I just look at this and it doesn't have an impact on me. I think that there's no way that it can't have an impact. It has to have an impact. And it's hard. It's complicated. That's why it's under the it's complicated category.
My article was from 2011. There might have been a different one.
Oh, okay.
And it's also, it's not there anymore.
I think it comes up every once in a while. Like, it makes the rounds.
Anyway, I found the one I was referring to on archive.org. We can put that in the show notes.
Perfect. I think the one that we covered was one that came out during the pandemic when everybody was home scrolling and someone was scrolling these Utah Instagrammers, Mormon mommy bloggers during the pandemic going, wow, that's not what my life looks like during the pandemic.
Yeah.
This is why, how many years ago? I think it was 2 years ago. I wrote an essay about the Mormon mom playgroup as a really important thing for me as a young mom and how that kind of has died out. Like even at, over the course of my stay-at-home mom career, I saw it get like just be less and less of a thing. But I think there's such value in being around other moms and seeing the reality and getting that reality check. And definitely when we're living at home and only seeing people through a filter, we miss out on some of that, what it's really like to be a mom. And it's definitely an advantage we have going to Relief Society twice a month and hearing stories from other people. And hopefully people are willing to be honest and vulnerable about what's going on in their lives and not paper over it like Instagram, but like really share the things that they're struggling with so that we all know we're not alone.
We do playgroup in my ward, and there are a couple other dads who show up, so I'm not alone, but it is a marvelous institution, and I'm sad to hear that it's died out elsewhere.
I think for me, as a result of the housing in Seattle, it's extremely expensive to live in the area that we lived in, and so people would be in our ward when they had one or two young kids and could live in an apartment. And then when they wanted a house, they had to leave. And so hollowed out the playgroup and the primary experience. So any other thoughts? Carol, did you have anything?
Just that idea that how often we're seeing an attitude of the children being so much smarter than the adults. I know some of that is to appeal to children, to be an empowering message to them. But it goes far beyond that in a lot of the movies that we see. I don't have young kids at home, but I still have my little grandkids around. And there are a few that I've noticed that with where the kids are bossing the parents around. And they're the ones who know better. And they're the ones who are just, yeah, all-knowing, the ones who fix everything. I'm thinking of Pinkalicious, and as cute as that is, she's pretty bossy pants. I don't know how long that would have lasted in my house or how many adults really enjoy children like that. But things like that where the kids are just the ones who know best. And there seems to be a little bit of a trend along those lines. And I do worry about that because I don't know where children are learning that there's wisdom that their parents have. If dad's always silly, if mom's busy, and the kids always know best. I think Encanto shows that. I think Coco shows that. I think there's a lot of those movies.
The Gilmore Girls definitely fit that trope. There is no teenager who is as smart as Rory. I'm sorry. Like, she was written in a lab by a bunch of writers and played really well by Alexis Bledel. But that is not a realistic expectation of what you're like as a 13-year-old girl.
Agreed.
Says someone who wasn't ever a 13-year-old girl. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's a reasonable comment for me to make.
Yes. Having been one myself and raised them, I would agree with you, Carl.
Okay. Excellent.
I think there is a trend from that. Like you were saying earlier, in the 50s and such, it was father knows best and talk to your parents and they'll help you cope with situations. And that's not so much the case in modern media overall as a trend. And maybe one movie like that is not a problem, but the trend is a problem. I feel it's important to expose my kids to some older media so they see this kind of thing where the parents are good parents and they're actually useful people to consult with when you have a problem and not the problem themselves, which is, it's a nice thing to see.
This is my plug for the 1960s Addams Family again, because I just, it was such a scream to watch some of those. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh. No, I just think that we have this idea that the children are smarter or they're turning to institutions instead of their parents. That's unfortunate.
All right. Thank you for this lovely discussion on motherhood. I hope everybody has a good Mother's Day, however you choose to celebrate it. You can follow my writing and book reviews on lizbusby.com. Carl, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Carl Cranny.
And Carol, where can people find you online?
Oh, Public Square, where I do a lot of my work.
Awesome. And Tiffany, where can people find you?
I podcast for an organization called This Week in Mormons. And my sister and I are what is known as the TWIM Sisters, the acronym for This Week in Mormons. And we podcast once a month for This Week in Mormons. And so you can go to This Week in Mormons both on Facebook and Twitter. And we actually even have a TWIM Sisters Instagram account. Every time we podcast, we do a segment called Our Favorite Things, and we put our favorite things on our Instagram account. So you can go to This Week in Mormons and you can hear myself and my sister. And then the other weeks when we're not podcasting, there are a variety of other hosts who podcast on TWIM. So you get a whole different, you get a flavor, a charcuterie board of podcasting hosts at TWIM.
Indeed. And they're all very fun. I have listened to the TWIM Sisters since you guys started, and I love your stuff. I really enjoy Mormons Behaving Badly, one of your recurring segments. Yes. Where we talk about members of the church who maybe we don't want to claim as members of the church. Thank you for joining us this week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share the podcast with a friend who enjoys good movies or TV and good conversation. And you can subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a rating or review. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode or any other episode. Do you have a favorite mother in media, or maybe least favorite mother in media we didn't mention? You can send us a message via email, social media, or on our website. It really makes our day as podcast hosts to hear from you. Carl, can you tell us what we'll be discussing in our next episode?
So next time, we will be discussing Bluey, the Australian animated TV show about a family of anthropomorphic dogs and the hijinks they get up to through the course of their lives. It's one of those shows for kids, but where it's obvious, at least to me, that the writers have both children and adults in mind when creating their little 7-minute long episodes. So be ready for that discussion on Bluey in 2 weeks.
And this has been Pop Culture on the Apricot Tree, encouraging you to seek after everything virtuous, lovely, of good report, or praiseworthy. We'll see you next time.